Hey guys, this is Horror Fan, and welcome back to my podcast on Anchor. Sorry for the late upload, because of college, and I was tired, so I couldn't, because I didn't have the energy to like do it. But now I'm doing it. This has been known for its controversy and how it's spoken in schools and stuff. It happened in 1963, which is really crazy. I'm going to do the horror talk of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Yes. So, John F. Kennedy, the 35th president of the United States, was assassinated on Friday, November 22, 1963 at 12:30 p.m. Central State Time? Central Time Zone, sorry. In Dallas, Texas, while riding in a presidential motorcade through Dealey Plaza, Kennedy was in a vehicle with his wife, Jacqueline, unfortunately. Texas Governor John Connally and Connally's wife, Nellie, when he was fatally shot at the nearby Texas School Book Depository by Lee Harvey Oswald. I'm not sure if you guys ever heard of Oswald, but I'll get to him soon. Governor Connally was seriously wounded in the attack. The motorcade was rushed to Parkland Memorial Hospital, where Kennedy was pronounced dead about 30 minutes after the shooting. Connally recovered, thank God. Wait, is he still alive? Oh, let me see. No, he died in 1993, actually. He was a Democrat and then a Republican in 1973. Okay, turns out former Republican President Richard Nixon appointed Connally as his Treasury Secretary. Got it. Okay, that's nice. He was 76 years old. He was a Republican through 1973 through 1993, and then Democrat, I'm not sure what year he was until 1973. He suffered a breathing problem and was admitted to the Houston Methodist Hospital in Houston, where he died from pulmonary fibrosis on June 15, unfortunately. May he rest in peace, and my heart goes out to his family. Oswald, a former U.S. Marine, was arrested by the Dallas Police Department 70 minutes after the initial shooting. He was charged under Texas state law with the murder of Kennedy and that of J.D. Tippit, a Dallas police officer. J.D. Tippit, he was 39 years old. Really crazy. He was survived by his wife. May he rest in peace. Then at 11:21 a.m., November 24, 1963, as live television cameras were covering his transfer from the city jail to the county jail, Oswald was fatally shot in the basement of Dallas Police Headquarters, then in the Dallas Municipal Building by Dallas nightclub operator Jack Ruby. Like Kennedy, Oswald was also taken to Parkland Memorial Hospital, where he soon died. Ruby was convicted of Oswald's murder, though it was later overturned on appeal, and Ruby died in prison in 1967 while waiting a new trial, unfortunately. Oh, wow. He was 55 years old. Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, he was overturned with a criminal penalty. Died of pulmonary embolism secondary to bronchogenic carcinoma less than a month after his cancer diagnosis. May he rest in peace. After a 10-month investigation, the Warren Commission concluded that Oswald assassinated Kennedy, that Oswald had acted entirely alone, and that Ruby had acted alone in killing Oswald. Kennedy was the 8th and most recent U.S. president to die in office, and the 4th following Lincoln, Garfield, and McKinley to be assassinated. Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson automatically became president upon Kennedy's death. In his 1979 report, the United States House Select Committee on Assassinations, HSCA, agreed with the Warren Commission that Oswald's three rifle shots caused the injuries that Kennedy and Connally sustained. After analysis of Dictate Bell audio recording, the HSCA concluded that Kennedy was likely, quote, assassinated as a result of a conspiracy, end quote. The committee could not identify a second gunman or a group involved in a possible conspiracy. However, the HSCA concluded that analysis pointed to an additional gunshot and, quote, a high probability that two gunmen fired at the president, end quote. So they don't know if Oswald acted alone or if he had an accomplice. So this is actually an unsolved case because they first believed that Oswald killed Kennedy, but now they think there was a second gunman. So it remains unsolved. Yeah, surprise. That's why, yeah, I didn't forget because I'm not an idiot, obviously. Oh, by the way, with Kennedy's age, John F. Kennedy, one second. He was 46 years old. Wait, what about his wife, Jacqueline Bouvier? She died in 1994, unfortunately. She was 64 years old. She was thrown from her horse, and then a swollen lymph node was discovered in her groin, which was initially diagnosed by the doctors to be caused by an infection. Developed new symptoms, including a stomach ache and swollen lymph nodes in her neck. It was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin lymphoma, a blood cancer. So, yeah. And then she died in her sleep, but with her children by her side. Then her son, John F. Kennedy Jr., announced his mother's death to the press. Oh, that's not good. May she rest in peace. And my heart goes out to her family. So the U.S. Justice Department concluded active investigations and stated, quote, that no persuasive evidence can be identified to support the theory of a conspiracy, end quote, in the assassination. However, Kennedy's assassination is still the subject of widespread debate and has spawned numerous conspiracy theories and alternative scenarios. Polls conducted from 1966 to 2004 found that up to 80% of Americans suspected that there was a plot or cover-up. The assassination was the first of four major assassinations of the 1960s in the U.S., 2 years before Malcolm X's assassination in 1965, and 5 years before the assassinations of Martin Luther King Jr., unfortunately, and Robert F. Kennedy in 1968. So location, Dealey Plaza in Dallas, Texas, U.S., November 22, 1963, 58 years ago at 12:30 p.m., target John F. Kennedy, a sniper assassination, weapons, 6.5 by 52 millimeter Italian, what the hell, Carcano M91/38 bolt action rifle, and 38 Smith & Wesson Victory Model 10 revolver. That's John F. Kennedy and J.D. Tippit, injured John Connolly and James Tigg. Perpetrator Lee Harvey Oswald, because that's literally like the only perpetrator to do it, honestly. So, yeah. The charges, Lee Harvey Oswald's murder, two counts murder before trial. Before I get on to the horror talk, don't forget to follow me on Anchor and Spotify. Let's get on to assassination of John F. Kennedy. Oh, God. I mean, I never did a horror talk about assassination of a president because, like, listen. Like, I mean, I watch the news. I'm not too big of politics because, like, they're like, ugh, for fuck's sake, seriously. But yes, but still, I mean, not much people talk about this, but still, I just want to just talk about it. So obviously, yeah. I'm not sure if you guys are like interested to politics or assassination, but who knows? I'll find someone. Sure, why I said that. Sorry about that. All right. Background: Kennedy traveled to Texas to smooth over frictions in the Democratic Party between liberals Ralph Yarborough, Don Yarborough, and conservative Texas Governor John Connolly. Oh, okay. The visit was first agreed upon by Kennedy, Texas Native Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson, and Connally during a meeting in El Paso in June. Kennedy had three primary goals in mind. Number one, to help raise more Democratic Party presidential campaign fund contributions. Number two, to begin his quest for re-election in November 1964. And number three, to help make political amends among several leading Texas Democratic Party members who appear to be fighting among themselves. The trip was announced in September 1963. The motorcade route was finalized on November 18 and announced soon after. Route to Dealey Plaza. Kennedy's itinerary called for him to arrive at Dallas Love Field via a short flight from Carswell Air Force Base in Fort Worth. The motorcade route through Dallas with Kennedy, Connally, and their wives together in a single limousine, and Johnson and his wife two cars behind, was intended to give Kennedy maximum exposure to local crowds before his arrival for a luncheon at Dallas Market Center, where he would meet with civic and business leaders. Kenneth O'Donnell, Kennedy's friend and appointment secretary, had selected the trademark, one of the buildings of Dallas Market Center, as the destination for the motorcade and location of the luncheon. Leaving from Dallas Love Field, the motorcade had been allotted 45 minutes to reach the trademark at a planned arrival time of 12:15 p.m. The itinerary was designed to serve as a meandering 10-mile, 16-kilometer route between the two places, and the motorcade vehicles could be driven slowly within the allotted time. Special Agent Winston G. Lawson, a member of the White House detail who acted as the advanced Secret Service agent, and Secret Service Agent Forrest V. Starrell, special agent in charge of the Dallas office, was the most active in planning the actual motorcade route. On November 14, both men attended a meeting at Love Field and drove over the route that Sorrells believed was best suited for the motorcade. From Love Field, the route passed through a suburban section of Dallas through downtown along Main Street, a right turn on N. Houston Street for one block, a left turn on Elm Street passing through Dealey Plaza, and down a short segment of the Stemmons Freeway to the trademarks. Kennedy had planned to return to Love Field to leave for a fundraising dinner in Austin later that day. For the return trip, the agents selected a more direct route of about 4 miles, 6.4 kilometers. Some of this route will be used after the assassination. The planned route to the trademark was widely reported in Dallas newspapers several days before the event to benefit people who wished to view the motorcade. I guess many people in Texas loved John F. Kennedy, which is like not surprising because obviously yes. So to pass through downtown Dallas, a route west along Main Street rather than Elm Street, one block to the north, was chosen since this was the traditional parade route and provided the maximum building and crowd views. The Main Street section of the route prevented a direct turn onto the Fort Worth Turnpike exit, which also served as the Stedman's Freeway exit. The route to the trademark, as this exit was only accessible from Elm Street. Therefore, the planned motorcade route included a short one block turn at the end of the downtown segment of Main Street onto Houston Street for one block North Ward before turning again west onto Elm. That way, they could proceed through Dealey Plaza before exiting Elm onto the Stemmons Freeway. The Texas School Book Depository was and still is situated at the northwest corner of the Houston and Elm Street intersection. The Dallas motorcade used three vehicles for Secret Service and police protection. So, the first car, an unmarked white Ford hardtop, carried Dallas Police Chief Jesse Curry, Secret Service Agent Wynn Lawson, Sheriff Bill Decker, and Dallas Field Agent Forrest Sorrells. The second car, a 1961 Lincoln Continental Convertible, was occupied by Driver Agent Bill Greer, SAIC Roy Kellerman, Governor John Colony, Nellie Connally, President Kennedy, and Jackie Kennedy. The third car, a 1965 Cadillac convertible codenamed halfback contain driver agent Sam Kinney, ATSAIC Emery Roberts, presidential aides Ken O'Donnell and Dave Powers, driver agent George Hickey, and PRS agent Glenn Bennett. Secret Service agents Clint Hill, Jack Reddy, Tim McInturay, and Paul Landis rode on the running boards. On November 22, after a breakfast speech in Fort Worth, where Kennedy had stayed overnight after arriving from San Antonio, Houston, and Washington, D.C., the previous day, Kennedy boarded Air Force One, which departed at 11:10 a.m. and arrived at Love Field 15 minutes later. At about 11:40, Kennedy's motorcade left Love Field for the trip through Dallas, running on a schedule about 10 minutes longer than the planned 45 due to enthusiastic crowds estimated at between 150,000 to 200,000 people and two unplanned stops directed by Kennedy. now the assassination, which is shooting in Dealey Park. Kennedy's open-top 1961 Lincoln Continental four-door convertible limousine entered Dealey Plaza at 12:30 p.m. Central Time Zone. Nellie Connolly, the First Lady of Texas, turned to Kennedy, sitting behind her, and commented, quote, "Mr. President, you can't say Dallas doesn't love you," end quote. Kennedy's reply, quote, "No, you certainly can't," end quote, were his last words, unfortunately. Oh, boy. From Houston Street, the limousine turned left onto Elm en route to the Simmons Freeway. As it passed through the Texas School Book Depository, shots were fired. 80% of witnesses recalled hearing this. A Mannlicher Carcano rifle and shell casings were found near an open window on the Book Depository's sixth floor. Shortly after Kennedy began waving, a few witnesses recognized the first gunshot for what it was, but there was little reaction from most in the crowd or those riding in the motorcade. Many later said they imagined what they heard to be a firecracker or a vehicle backfiring. The Warren Commission, based on the Zeb Roger film, which I'll get to that later, found that the limousine had traveled an average speed of 11.2 miles per hour, 80.0 kilometers hour over the 186 feet, 57 miles of Elm Street, immediately preceding the fatal headshots. Texas School Book Depository employee Bonnie Ray Williams testified that he recognized Oswald as someone he saw on the sixth floor twice before the assassination occurred. Within 1 second, Governor Connolly and Mrs. Kennedy turned abruptly from looking to their left to looking to their right, beginning at Zeb Roger film frame 162. Connolly, like Kennedy, was a World War II military veteran and a longtime hunter. He testified that he immediately recognized the sound of a high-powered rifle and turned his head and torso rightward to see Kennedy behind him. He testified he could not see Kennedy, so he then started to turn forward again, turning from his right to his left, and then when his head was facing about 20 degrees left of center, he was hit in his upper right back by a bullet that he did not hear fired. The doctor who operated on Colony estimated that his head at the time he was hit had been 27 degrees left of center. After Connolly was hit, he shouted, quote, "Oh no, 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 my God, they're going to kill us all," end quote. Mrs. Colony testified that just after hearing a loud, frightening noise from behind her and to her right, she turned toward Kennedy and saw him raise his arms and elbows with his hands in front of his face and throat. She then heard another shot and then Governor Colony yelling. Mrs. Colony then turned away from Kennedy toward her husband, at which point another gunshot wounded, and both she and the limousine's rear interior were covered with fragments of skull, blood, and brain. Yeah, that was with, according to the Warren Commission and the House Select Committee on Assassinations, Kennedy was waving to the crowds on his right with his right arm upraised on the side of the limo when a shot entered his upper back, penetrated his neck, and slightly damaged a spinal vertebra at the top of his right lung. The bullet exited his throat, nearly centerline just beneath his larynx, and nicked the left side of his suit tie knot. He raised his elbows, clenched his fist in front of his face and neck, then leaned forward and left Mrs. Kennedy facing him, then raised her arms around him. Also, guys, Jackie, she had her husband's blood on her, which is, like, really, really horrifying that she witnessed her husband being killed right in front of her, which is, like, holy shit. According to the Warren Commissioner's simple bullet theory, Governor Colley also reacted after the same bullet penetrated his back just below his right armpit. The bullet created an oval-shaped entry wound, impacted and destroyed 4 inches, 10 centimeters of his right fifth rib and exited his chest just below his right nipple. This created a 2.5-inch, 6.5-centimeter oval-shaped air-sucking chest wound. That same bullet then entered his arm just above his right wrist and cleanly shattered his right radius bone into 8 pieces. The bullet exited below the wrist at the inner side of his right palm and finally lodged in his left inner thigh. The Warren Commission theorized that the single bullet struck sometime between Zapruder frames 210 and 225, while the House Select Committee theorized that it struck at approximately Zapruder frame 190. According to the Warren Commission, a second shot struck Kennedy was recorded in Zapruder film frame 313. The commission did not conclude whether this was the second or third bullet fired. The limousine passed before the Johnny Lee Bryan North pergola concrete structure. The two investigative committees concluded that the second shot to hit Kennedy entered the rear of his head. The House Select Committee placed the entry wound 4 inches higher than the Warren Commission placed it and passed in fragments through his skull. This created a large, roughly ovular hole on the rear right side of his head, which is really crazy. Kennedy's blood and fragments of his scalp, brain, and skull landed on the interior of the car, the inner and outer surfaces on the front glass windshield, the raised sun visors, the front engine hood, and the rear trunk lid. His blood and fragments also landed on the Secret Service follow-up car, its driver's left arm, and the motorcycle officers riding on both sides of Kennedy just behind his vehicle. Secret Service Special Agent Clint Hill was riding on the left front running board of the follow-up car immediately behind Kennedy's limousine. Hill testified that he heard one shot, then as documented in other films and concurrent with Zapruder film 308, he jumped off into Elm Street and ran forward to board the trunk of the limousine and protect Kennedy. Hill testified to the Warren Commission that he heard the fatal headshot as he was reaching the limousine, quote, approximately 5 seconds, end quote, after the first shot that he heard. After Kennedy was shot in the head, Mrs. Kennedy began climbing out onto the back of the limousine, though she later had no recollection of doing so. Hill believed she was reaching for something, perhaps a piece of Kennedy's skull. He jumped onto the back of the limousine. At the same time, Mrs. Kennedy returned to her seat, and he clung to the car as it exited Dealey Plaza and accelerated, speeding to Parkland Memorial Hospital. After Mrs. Kennedy crawled back into her limousine seat, Governor and Mrs. Colley heard her repeatedly say, quote, they have killed my husband. I have his brains in my hand, end quote. Mrs. Kennedy recalled this, quote, all the ride to the hospital, I kept bending over him saying, Jack, Jack, can you hear me? I love you, Jack. I kept holding the top of his head down, trying to keep the brains in, end quote. Governor Colley and a spectator wounded. Governor Colley was seated directly in front of Kennedy and 3 inches more to the left than Kennedy. He was seriously injured but survived, which is like, whoa. Doctors later stated that after the governor was shot, his wife pulled him onto her lap and the resulting posture helped close his front chest wound, causing air to be sucked directly into his chest around his collapsed right lung. Bystander James Tigg received a minor wound to the right cheek while standing 531 feet, which is, or 162 miles away from the depository's sixth floor easternmost window, 270 feet, 82 miles in front of and slightly to the right of Kennedy's head, facing the direction and more than 16 feet below the top of Kennedy's head. Tank's injury occurred when a bullet or bullet fragments with no copper casing struck the nearby Main Street South curb. A deputy sheriff noticed some blood on Tag's cheek, and Tag realized that something had stung his face during the shooting. When Tag pointed to where he had been standing, the police officer noticed a bullet smear on a nearby curb. 9 months later, the FBI removed the curb, and a spectrographic analysis revealed metallic residue consistent with the lead core in Oswald's ammunition. Tag testified before the Warren Commission and initially stated that he was wounded on his cheek by either the second or third shots of the three shots he remembered hearing. When the commission counsel pressed him to be more specific, Tank testified that the second shot wounded him. I'm not sure how the hell he like heard it, but I believe he did not hear it because he didn't know he was shot to the freaking cheek. Like, what the fuck? Really crazy. Literally really crazy. There are news, but before I get onto that shit, no offense. assassinate day John F. Kennedy. Yeah, I know.
This version tracks the limousine and maintains President Kennedy and Governor Connally at center frame. This version is only in slow motion.
Yeah, only in slow motion. So it's actually blurry, but I could try to tell you guys how he got shot. Kennedy, he was waving, and then he had his fist on his chin or face, and then something like and then he was like shot in a chest or something like that. I'm not sure exactly. And then Mrs. Kennedy, his wife, like was waving, but she didn't know what was going on. The president had his head down, and his wife noticed something was wrong with her husband. And then he got shot in the head, where the skull and the brain, and the blood went to his wife. And then she went back, and then she got up from her seat and was going to the back, like, holy crap. And I think that's a secret agent or a secret service agent. I'm not entirely sure exactly. And then she had to go back to her seat, and they went to the hospital. Holy shit, that's crazy. That's freaking insane. Like witnessing her husband's death is like so traumatized for her. Like, damn, that's crazy. Oh, bullshit, Moya. But let me do part two. One second.